kids as if they are, I don't know, objects in the house. We don't deal with them based on the fact.
That's a serious way to say it.
It is, but that's the sad reality, that most of the times we deal with them as they are objects in the house. Yeah. We don't deal with them as creatures that have feelings. You know, like even if you have a pet in the house, usually sometimes you try not to upset that pet. But with children, like we yell at them, we scream at them, we hit them, we don't pay attention to their inner feelings as much as we should. And a lot of parents and educators sadly don't have this, maybe because they themselves lacked it when they were young. So if you lack, as we say, you cannot give that which you lack.
Yeah, it kind of gets passed down.
So it is very important to the parents that they do understand that when it comes to children, they have to go inside, not on the outside.
Okay, let's take a short break and we'll be right back.
When I was born, the first words that I had heard were the words of Allah being whispered through my ear. And as I felt Allah's presence in my soul, that day Islam took me in its fold.
And we're back here with Brother Abdullah. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing on IRIB English Radio. So, Brother Abdullah, you were talking about how to make my child happy.
So, we were saying that we need to understand the feelings of the child. If we don't understand the feeling of the child himself, not only will he be rebellious, he would do bad things just to attract attention of his parents.
Yeah,
he would
like want a call attention. For help, right?
Yeah, it's a cry for help. So you see that all their wrongdoings is just a cry for help. And if that continues, God forbid, kids might do, like, they might go out of their way to get attention. Some of them, they go into, for example, drug abuse. Some of them, they go out into drinking
abuse. It also affects their adulthood later on,
right? It does.
It's childhood trauma. It's
exactly. When they even have a term for it. I think they call it childhood abandonment.
When mental child, abandonment.
Yeah, when the child is just, no one cares about him.
Yeah.
Because we assume he's fine. We're giving him food. We're giving him clothes. We're giving him what he wants. We assume he's fine.
But you're saying there's more to a child than just his materialistic or his physical aspects. There's, you know, his personality, his mental well-being. He has to connect to you. And there's a way to make him happy, really happy.
Yeah. So it's basically we have to start with respecting the emotions of the child, respecting his feelings.
Good point.
Which we don't. So, for example, when we want to advise a child, or we want to direct them to something. Now, as a child, or even as a grown-up, I don't like to be told in front of people. If I make a mistake, I would like to be, you know, told.
Quietly,
you know, privately, just me and you, we talk to each other. Say you did this wrong, could you please, you know, make sure you don't do it? And
because it's embarrassing. Even
Not the fact that it's embarrassing. The fact that it hurts your feelings.
It hurts your feelings, right? Because it's embarrassing. Yeah. No.
So what we try to do is we try with kids. We try not to do that. But as parents, sometimes we find ourselves telling our children off.
Yeah.
Or we try to instruct them to do things, or even have a go at them, in front of other people.
And that really diminishes their sense of confidence.
It does.
Doesn't it?
It destroys them.
Does it affect their life later on as well?
Of course it does. This is what we're saying. That any damages done to the child at a younger age will grow up with it. He will grow up with it. It will become, as we say, it becomes a behavior.
Yeah.
Right? So all the people who have all these new terms, OSD, DDCC, BBC, and all, and every time we move on, we get a new term.
New dictionary.
Yeah, for diseases that didn't even exist back in the day.
Yeah.
And it's just because the parents these days, sadly, they just not educated themselves in terms of how to deal with their own kids.
Of course.
So instead of just yelling at the kid publicly, disrespecting his feelings and his identity, take him aside, speak to him gently, calmly, advise him. So he, you know, at least you protect his feeling from being hurt. Now, any single word that you say to me, it surely could damage me, right? And sometimes you might say one word, two words, it could damage me forever, right?
For Depends example, on the words I'm using.
Yeah, so we have a lot of articles written about this, that words are more powerful than bullets.
Yeah.
Right? So a bullet could, I don't know, harm you, but then the wound heals. So with words, sometimes it never heals. It never heals. Sometimes you say something to me, even if you come and apologize to me,
yeah,
it will always remain in my mind every time I see you.
That's really tragic.
Even if I say, well, okay, he said sorry, but the word is just not going to... I can't delete it, right? I can't hit the delete button and go away.
Yeah.
Imagine that to our child who's still fresh.
Yeah. We'll take a short break and we'll be right back.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam said, Allah will write a reward for he who kisses his child, and Allah will bring happiness on Judgment Day to he who makes his child happy.
And we're back here with Brother Sayyid Abdullah and Musawi here in the studio. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing on IRIB English Radio. So Brother Abdullah and I were talking about the way to make your child truly happy. Brother Abdullah, we were talking about not embarrassing them or talking to them, advising them quietly when they do something wrong. Something along those lines.
Yeah, absolutely correct. The other thing that we can show in terms of respecting their feelings is that when they make a mistake, and if they make a mistake, we have to be very mindful and careful not to also hurt their feelings publicly through the way of punishment. So sometimes, for example, the child does a mistake, and instead of me punishing him by himself, alone, I, for example, in front of his siblings, I make him stand up and I give it to his life. Right. So it's one thing talking to him alone and punishing him alone. It's another thing doing it in front of his siblings, or some people do it in front of his friends.
In front of anyone.
Or in front of anyone. So that actually will hurt their feelings.
Yeah.
Just by you trying to do that to them. So you need to understand that when he's with his friends, when he's, like we say, when he's in the zone, he has his own personality that he needs to protect. Yeah. And when you come and you break it in front of his friends, his friends might lose respect for him, for example, or at least they won't look at him the same anymore. And he can feel that as a child. He feels that.
Of course.
And especially some parents, like, they make fun of their own kids in front of people. And they, I don't know, they look at the things that they do and they keep telling them off.
Yeah, the way I see it is that as an adult, and especially as a parent, you have a responsibility to take care of your child, not only his physical being, but his personality as well. Because, you know, God has given you this small person, and it's they're growing.
Absolutely.
And, you know, this really does affect their life later on. So you have to protect it in any way possible and never, ever harm them. I mean, especially if you're their parent. The person that they look up to, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's a very important point that the parents need to keep in mind. So when we talk about children, making them happy, we have to look at their feelings first and foremost. So when it comes to children, at least we need to give them some time, like dedicate some time to them where we sit with them, where we understand what they want, you know, find out what they need, like from within. Sometimes a child might be craving a hug from his parent.
Yeah.
He might be craving, I don't know, a bit of reward, like in terms of words,
the
right?
Emotional connection is important.
The emotional reward. Yeah. Sometimes just, you know, like I said, a hug and a kiss and just these gestures of telling them that you love him. He would need it.
Okay. That's all very, very good points that you've shared today with us. Thank you, Brother Abdullah. It's great having you here. That's the end of our program, inshallah. We will continue in the next episode. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please contact us via email at englishradio@irib.ir or on the social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We have all of them. The handle is Call of Islam Radio. That's Call of Islam Radio. Or visit our website at www.parstoday.com. Thank you, and we'll see you next episode. Thank you, and fi amanullah.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
Food for thought.
Dear listeners, on the occasion of Islamic Unity Week that spans the two dates of Rabiul Awwal, that is 12 and 17, which are marked respectively as the birthday of the Seal of Messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, we present you a statement from our beloved Prophet, which is so essential for unity and solidarity of the Ummah. Regard my Ahlul Bayt as the head is to the body and the eyes are to the head, because the body would not be guided except by the head, and the head cannot be guided except by the eyes.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Feeling down, it's all right to cry and get help. That's all what a place called the Crying Room tries to tell its visitors in Spain. The Crying Room is part of a building located in central Madrid. It's free and open to the public. The Crying Room aims to remove the stigma attached to mental health, crying and seeking help. It offers a wide range of services, from a corner to crying to a phone with a list of psychologists people can call. Motivating messages are also visible on the walls. People have hailed the initiative, saying it helps them speak out about their negative emotions.
I think it's an excellent idea to visualize the widespread of the mental health issue. And I think it's a really fun take on it to call it the crying room, because of the Spanish expression, if you want to cry, go to the crying room. So it's kind of stigmatized to cry in Spain, as in many other countries. So I wanted to take part in this this visualization of the problem.
The crying room was opened in an effort to raise awareness about mental health and well-being. Official data in Spain showed that around 40% of people had symptoms of depression last year. Another 30% experienced anxiety.
The first movie in orbit in the making. Two Russian nationals who traveled to the International Space Station to shoot scenes of that movie are now back on Earth. The Soyuz MS-18 spacecraft carrying an actress and a film director undocked from the ISS early Sunday and successfully touched down in Kazakhstan about 3 hours later. The film crew, along with a veteran astronaut, blasted off from the Russian-leased Baikonur Cosmodrome earlier this month. They spent 12 days in the ISS to shoot the scenes. The mission beats a Hollywood movie project starring Tom Cruise. The mission adds to a long list of firsts for Russia's space industry. Fabric cuts used to recreate Vietnamese landscapes. A woman living in the capital, Hanoi, has been doing that for 40 years now. The artist, 61 years old, explains what material she uses to create her artworks.
All the details in my artworks are cut from cloth which is used for oyai, traditional costume, or cut from silk scarves. These are very small details, and I have to get the whole cloth for oyai. I even have to cut them from beautiful silk scarves sent from my friends abroad.
Took says sometimes hundreds of thousands of pieces of cloth are needed to shape the scenes. The cuts should be put together very carefully. Besides that, the woman has to work in a room without any air conditioning, even in the boiling summers of Hanoi. That's because, she says, the pieces of cloth are very tiny and would easily be blown away. Her hard work has paid off. The creations sell for up to $5,000. The Vietnamese artist says her work are a summary of the passion and the beauty she has experienced after traveling across her country.
Materials and methods are vital for an artist who combines them to create a masterpiece. Well, a Brazilian artist has used an unusual material to create a huge, dazzling artwork. Mondano has drawn a mural measuring 1,000 square meters using ashes from the burned Amazon rainforest. The artwork on the side of a building in the city of Sao Paulo depicts a firefighter standing near the scenes of deforestation, blazes, and dead animals. Mondano says he traveled extensively to feel that sadness and, more importantly, to collect ashes for his paintings. He says his aim is to call attention to the environment in his home country, where thousands of wildfires break out each year.
Be the first to catch the balloon. That's what competitors played to win the title at the first Balloon World Cup in Spain. The competition was held in an amusement park in the northeastern city of Tarragona. Participants had to get the balloon to touch the ground before their opponent could touch it. The event was organized by FC Barcelona player Gerard Piqué and a famous web streamer and commentator.
Get out of your comfort zone and try new things. Today we are very proud to have tried something like that, and that it has worked so well, and that people have enjoyed it. In the end, it's about people having a great time.
The competition was inspired by a trio of American siblings whose balloon game videos had attracted millions of views on TikTok and Instagram. 32 countries competed for the title. An 18-year-old teenager from Peru became the first world champion of this tournament. He defeated his German rival in a 5-minute final match. For those of you with an extreme fear of needles, this may finally be the good news. A group of Dutch researchers say they are working to create painless needle-free injections. The researchers have developed what they call a bubble gun. The device uses a laser to push tiny droplets through the skin. Take a listen to David Fernandez Rivas, the head of the project, explaining how the process is done within a millisecond.
So within a millisecond, the glass that contains the liquid is heated by a laser. A bubble is created in the liquid, pushing the liquid at velocities on the order of 100 kilometers per hour. And we can see the gelatin, how it penetrates about 1 millimeter approximately.
Now, Rivas says the invention will help ease fear of needles and lower the threshold for vaccinations. He believes the new technology can also prevent the risk of contamination through needles and reduce medical waste. If you're eager to get a needle-free shot, you may still have to wait a few more years before they are made available to everyone. From a voyage aboard a fictional spacecraft to a real-life journey to space, a 90-year-old Canadian actor known for his portrayal of a starship captain for decades is now the oldest person ever going to space. After a couple of days of training, William Shatner hitched a ride aboard a suborbital spacecraft on Wednesday. He took off from a Texas desert as a guest alongside three other passengers, two professionals, and a paid customer. During the 10-minute flight, the team experienced more than 3 minutes of weightlessness. Now, listen to the actor describing the voyage as the most unbelievable experience of his life.
I'm so filled with emotion about what just happened. It's extraordinary. I hope I never recover from this. I hope that I can maintain what I feel now. I don't want to lose it.
During a televised journey, the capsule took its four passengers above the maximum altitude of 100 kilometers, a point where the curvatures of the Earth can be seen. With that, the space captain of the entertainment world also broke a record as the oldest space traveler. Now, many see his experience as the embodiment of the space travel promises he made through decades of acting.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The population of giant pandas in captivity has reached a record high of 673 in 2021. Official data shows this year 48 panda cubs were born, of which 46 survived. Meanwhile, the total number of overseas giant pandas has reached 69. This is the result of joint efforts by Chinese and foreign researchers following decades of caring for the lovely animals. In July, another study put the number of giant pandas living in the wild at over 1,800. The cute bears were then reclassified from endangered to vulnerable. Experts believe such research improves conservation efforts and facilitates monitoring of animal populations. With the help of artificial intelligence, Beethoven's 10th and last symphony is now completed. A group of German musicologists and programmers started the project over a year ago. They analyzed Beethoven's style and then used algorithms to teach a computer to complete the unfinished job. The work was released to mark the 250th anniversary of the prominent musician's death. The team said they tried hard to solve the puzzle while remaining faithful to Beethoven's process and vision.
I believe that if a composer like Ludwig van Beethoven were to live today, he would probably not only have a large technology team around him to help him, but he would push exactly such technologies and use them for his art. And for me, art is not something that stands fixed in space and is always the same, but that changes with the world, and we can witness that today.
When the German composer died in 1827, he left behind some musical sketches for his 10th symphony. Some experts tried to complete it in the past, but they did not succeed. Researchers in the United States have created an incredibly versatile robot named Leonardo O'Leo. Leo was developed by a team at the California Institute of Technology's Center for Autonomous Systems and Technologies. The futuristic robot can walk a tightrope, skateboard, and even fly. Its uniqueness lies in the fact that it uses not just one, but two modes of locomotion. The researchers who developed Leo believe that similar robots will be employed on a wider scale in the future.
I think we're going to see robots like Leonardo with these extraordinary locomotion capabilities be used in things like space exploration, because they can overcome very difficult terrain, they can reach hard-to-reach places. But then I think also robots will be more and more in our daily lives. As these robots become more and more robust, more and more reliable, we're going to see them for things like package delivery or helping in the house with daily chores.
Leo is 75 centimeters tall and has four propeller thrusters mounted on its shoulders. While walking, it mimics the movements of a human by using those propellers and a pair of actuated legs. The robot can transition smoothly between flying and walking. Leonardo perceives the world around it with the help of cameras and sensors. Hot air balloons were invented in the 18th century, enabling man to finally fulfill his dream of flying. After more than 200 years, people are still eager to ride the colorful vehicles. Some even use them competitively. In the German hot air ballooning championships, balloonists will fly over the skies of the green Bavarian town of Tegernsee. 25 of Germany's best pilots are vying for first place. The organizers of the event expect a tight race, as the contestants have all managed to pass the previous competitions with flying colors to qualify for the national championship.
A zoo in northeast France has an adorable new inhabitant, a white baby rhinoceros. The cute little male rhino was born on the 6th of October. The zoo staff have given him the name of Mole. He was able to withstand less than 2 hours after being born. Mole soon started feeding from his gentle 21-year-old mother called Tala. Mole is Tala's third baby.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
رضيت بالله ربا وبالإسلام. إسلام دينا رضيت بالله ربا وبالإسلام دينا.
In the name of Allah, the Light, the Nur, salam and salutations be upon all our dear listeners. Thank you very much for joining us, and please welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio on a special occasion. Today is the beginning of the Week of Unity, so please accept our congratulations on this special week. Today, Tuesday, is the 12th of Rabiul Awwal, 1443 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 27th of May, 1400 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 19th of October, 2021 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Thousands of greetings, happiness, and congratulations to all brothers and sisters on the Week of Unity. We open the Holy Quran and we bless this moment of today's special by recitation of chapter Al-Imran, verse 64.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. قُلْ يَا أَهْلَ الْكِتَابِ تَعَالَوْا إِلَى كَلِمَةٍ سَوَاءٍ بَيْنَنَا وَبَيْنَكُمْ أَلَّا نَعْبُدَ إِلَّا اللَّهَ وَلَا نُشْرِكَ بِهِ شَيْئًا وَلَا يَتَّخِذَ بَعْضُنَا بَعْضًا أَرْبَابًا مِنْ دون الله فإن تولوا فقولوا اشهدوا بأننا مسلمون.
Say, O people of the scripture, come to a word that is equitable between us and you, that we will not worship except Allah, and not associate anything with him, and not take one another as lords instead of Allah. But if they turn away, then say, bear witness that we are Muslims, submitting to him.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
This ayah introduces monotheism as the source of unity and solidarity among various religions, and calls on them to unify with each other and set up a safe community far from oppression and transgression. Undoubtedly, Muslims as the initial nucleus of this convergence can play an important role. When members of the society give up differences and their hearts become close to each other, the enemy cannot harm them.
Sallallahu ala Taha, خير الخلق وأحلاها. صلى الله على طه خير الخلق وأحلاها.
خير الخلق هو الهادي نور الكون به بادي عم الناس بإرشادي أزكى الخلق وأرضاها.
Our topic is about unity, unity in diversity. This is today's special from IRIB English Radio on the week of unity. Mankind was one nation believing in Tawhid, monotheism. Then they differed. Some of them believed and some disbelieved. So Allah sent the prophets with glad tidings and warnings. So whoever believes will enter paradise, and whoever disbelieves will enter hell. The conflict is still going on between belief and disbelief, truth and falsehood, and will continue until Allah inherits the earth and everyone on it. Islam is the religion for all of mankind. The Allah has commanded us to convey it to all people. This can only be achieved if we are strong, and strength is based on faith and unity. Hence Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala had commanded all the believers to adhere to his religion and to be united and not to be divided. Dear listeners of today's special, congratulations. Congratulations on the week of unity.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa linastain. And another one is, we have to put aside, we have to ignore the major differences among Muslims. Yet there's another aspect, and that is having and sensing integration against our enemies. Because when an enemy comes, okay, it doesn't ask whether you are a Shia or Sunni. We find that in the major oppressions inflicted against Muslims in Muslim lands, both Sunnis and Shias and followers of other denominations, all of them have been targeted by the enemies of the Islamic religion. And we find that in this connection, no enemy asks Muslims whether they are Sunni or Shias. Imagine that, for example, nowadays in Palestine, we find that Israelis, I mean, Zionists, oppose Palestinians, a great majority of whom are Sunnis, and at the same time, the same Zionists attack the Lebanese people, a great majority of whom are Shias. At the same time, we find that because of this, because of this kind of necessity, which is felt to be a much-needed principle and much-needed stratagem, unity and integration is first and foremost an Islamic and Quranic principle, and this is a major principle for the victory of Muslims and the voice of Muslims. And this is a religious, intellectual, and sacred mission entrusted to each and every Muslim, and it paves the ground for doing major jobs, major good jobs for public welfare.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio.
May this moment last forever in your hearts, a day you'll always remember every part.
Today's a special.
This feeling of love, just let it grow forever through your life. Bring beautiful years of joy between you till the end of time.
Internal and external obstacles to Muslim unity is the title of this part. There is the internal obstacles that is the result of denominational bias. This bias affects all groups of people. We must overcome this bias. Having faith in one's creed is laudable. It is also good to insist on these creeds, but this faith must not cross the line between logical argumentation and aggression and aggressive rejection of others' beliefs. Our brothers who are part of the Muslim Ummah must treat each other with respect. They have a right to adhere to their own beliefs, but they must respect others, their rights, and their beliefs. Muslims must leave ideological debates to scholarly meetings. Ulama and scholars may engage in religious debates. But there is a difference between religious debates at scholarly meetings and an exchange of insult in public and in front of an audience who are not capable of scholarly analysis.
We're selfish, you know. We want the best for us, for our people, for our community, for our families, for our friends. We don't like to share the blessings of life with other people. But this is the battle of the nafs. This is the struggle that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants us to go through in order for us to elevate ourselves, in order for us to achieve His satisfaction. And this is extremely important for us to keep in mind, respected brothers and sisters. I request that each one of you this day make a vow that from now, and this is the action plan, from now till next year, I will introduce myself to 5 new friends from different backgrounds, communities, and races. Can you do that? Can you find a friend from a different background and treat this friend better than like your own family members? Can you? It is our faith, respected brothers and sisters, that makes us accepting of other people. This is the diversity that we see in the religion of Islam. This is the unity that we see in the religion of Islam. So I would like to request from you, and Allah will give you so many blessings if you do this, from now till next year, befriend 5 people who are different than you. But remember, go after the faithful ones, of course, because associating with people who don't have faith, people who are corrupt, people who are lost in this life, you know, that will negatively impact you. Unless you want to guide them, of course. Reach out to them and guide them. That's a different story. But I want you to make it a plan and goal for yourself. From now till next year, 5 new friends. And you won't believe how enriching this experience will be for you. Because when you get exposed, you know, to different types of people from different backgrounds, you learn. The Quran says Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made you into nations and tribes. God has made you different so you can come to know one another. So you learn from each other's experiences. If you're always associating with people who are exactly like you, they think like you, they come from the same background as you, what have you got to learn, really? Not much. It's when you associate with people of other backgrounds that you come to learn from their experiences, and that makes your life so much more enriching. So let's take these wonderful lessons from the Imam alayhi salam. And the Imam alayhi salam teaches us one golden lesson, is that the most important factor that unites us, yes, it's our faith, but the most important factor that can unite humanity is oppression. That we repel oppression.
Dear brothers and sisters, at the beginning of the Week of Unity, please accept our congratulations from IRIB English Radio. Till another program of today's special, Fi Amanillah.
Mustafa, anta al-Nabi al-Amin, wa Sayyid al-Mursaleen, rahmatan lil-alamin, jitta bil-haqq al-yaqeen. Anta al-Nabi al-Amin, سيد المرسلين رحمة للعالمين جئت بالحق اليقين.
10 minutes.
Last day of September, an Israeli airplane touches down at Manama Airport. Israel's foreign minister is on a landmark mission. He has come to Bahrain to open the regime's first embassy in the kingdom, 1 year after Manama and Tel Aviv normalized ties with each other. Unlike the Bahraini authorities, Bahraini people are not happy about the visit. This can be understood from the burning tires on the outskirts of the city. The protesters consider it as a betrayal of the Palestinian cause. After Al Khalifa declared that it would join the Abraham Accords in September 2020, 17 political and civil society organizations representing widespread segments of Bahrain society signed a statement denouncing the decision. Yair Lapid's visit to Manama and his official meeting with King Hamad Al Khalifa dashed all the remaining hopes of reversing course in favor of the Palestinian people. In the words of Sheikh Hossein Al-Day, Deputy Secretary General of the opposition Al-Wafaq National Islamic Society, the visit of the Israeli Foreign Minister to Bahrain is an act firmly rejected, condemned, and denounced by the people of Bahrain. As a result, the Bahraini people, who care much about the fate of their Muslim brothers and sisters in the occupied territories, took to the streets to express their anger at a regime that cares the least, if any, about public opinion. Protesters chanted anti-government slogans denouncing the unholy alliance between the two regimes of Bahrain and Israel. Bahrainis also went online, launching a campaign to voice their anger against the visit through hashtags such as Al Bahrain Tarafaz Al Sahayina, Bahrain Reject Zionists, and Bahrainiyun Zitta Tatbir, and Bahrainis Against Normalization. Not surprisingly, the protests turned violent as the police fired tear gas canisters to disperse the angry yet peaceful crowd. But the Bahraini police did not stop there. Bahraini pages report that the security forces suppressed the demonstration rejecting normalization on Sitra Island, south of the capital.
It's important to stress that these protests were not necessarily on the scale of protests that we've seen before. The Bahraini government is keen to ensure there is no disruption to Yair Lapid's visit as it continues to try to improve ties with Israel as a result of the political benefits it believes that normalization of ties with Israel will bring. And therefore, the more potent of the protests that took place, police decided to deploy tear gas and decided to use force in order to suppress those protests, in order to prevent them from spreading through the Bahraini population. These protests that were supported, that were encouraged by an initiative that's called that roughly translates as the Gulf Alliance Against the Normalization of Ties Between the Gulf and Israel. So police managed to suppress some of these protests through the use of tear gas and the like, in order to ensure that Yair Lapid's visit went smoothly.
According to Bahrain Al Yawm news website, a number of the protesters are still unaccounted for after they were summoned to appear at the police station.
the total number of peaceful demonstrations reached at least 20, some of which were met with repression by the security forces, who assaulted the demonstrators by beating them, throwing tear gas at them, and sound bombs, which led to the injury of a citizen. In addition, security forces summoned at least 14 citizens and detained at least 30 peaceful demonstrators, who were added to the thousands of prisoners of conscience in the prisons of Bahrain.
There are also reports of widespread detentions regarding the recent protests. Although the suppression and detention of protesters are nothing new in Bahrain, a despotic regime where the police and security forces respond to any minor objection with violence and all out of proportion. Since the 2011 nationwide protests in Bahrain, where people demanded freedom and structural reforms, things have just become worse, as opposition parties have become outlawed and the independent news outlets have been shut down.
We often see that there is arrest without charge. Prisoners or political prisoners tend to languish in prison for years on end. Some of them end up dying in prison. And this is not just in Bahrain. This is in Saudi Arabia and the UAE and other places as well. Even if we're looking at Qatar, where Hazza' bin Ali, who protested the election law, is still in prison, still detained. And he's been in prison now for a few months. In other words, the treatment of opposition, the treatment of political prisoners has often been condemned by human rights organizations as not worthy of humanity, as oppressive, and where there's also reports of the use of torture and the like.
Moreover, in response to the increasing pro-democracy activism online, Manama has intensified its efforts to silence peaceful criticism and intimidate activists online under vague terrorist-related pretexts.
A Bahraini citizen may be imprisoned because of his participation in a peaceful demonstration, or even because of a tweet in which he expressed his position on a specific event inside or outside Bahrain, as happened with one of the opposition figures, Nabil Rajab, or even may be held accountable for a mere intention, as happened recently with the human rights activist Mr. Ali Muhanna, who was summoned to the police station on charges of an intent to participate in a peaceful march against normalization with Israel, and was forced to sign not to participate in any peaceful march.
As for the Abraham Accords, the Manama regime supports that it's all for the promotion of peace in the region. But ironically enough, the regime is prepared to commit any crime against anyone who opposes the deal.
So we call for coexistence for all nations, all peoples of the Middle East, to live side by side despite differences in ideologies and religion and sect and ethnicity, live side by side to achieve stability, security, and prosperity for all nations of the Middle East.
Even months before the accords, people in Bahrain criticized the Al-Khalifa regime for paving the way for the Trump administration to sell what they call the deal of the century. For a large number of the Bahraini people, the Al-Khalifa monarchy is already an illegitimate entity, never representing the people, a reason per se Manama is avidly after strong ties with the Israeli regime, especially after the botched U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan.
More than anything else, it's about survival, it's about surviving as a regime, it's about adapting to the realities that are in the region, in which you have a U.S. hegemon power, U.S. military bases, U.S. that essentially exerts significant influence over foreign policy and the like, and therefore, in order to have influence over the U.S., these Gulf states believe that it's essential to have ties with Israel.
As the Bahraini regime moves more away from its people, it has more to make overtures with others outside the country, including the Israelis. Suppressing the nation, burying the Palestinian cause, and outreaching the enemy are not forgivable sins, and the chickens will come home to roost sooner or later.
حادث مؤلم جدا للجميع السعوديين.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.